This information is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with regard to the subject matter covered. It is offered with the understanding that the presenters are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional.
Welcome to the Sugarland Real Estate Investing and Real Estate Financial Planning Podcast. Learn all about investing in real estate in Sugarland, Texas, with a combination of real estate financial planning and modeling with numbers specific to Sugarland. Plus, syndicated, more generalized recordings of live and pre-recorded real estate investing classes. Not all of them specific to Sugarland. Be sure to stay tuned after the podcast for a message from our sponsors.
Well, good morning and welcome, everyone. I am your host, James Orr, and this is another super interesting class. This is the class where we discuss, is it better to buy rental properties with 20% down or to take all of the extra time and effort in order to save up until you have enough money to buy rental properties for cash? And we're doing this in both cases. We're doing this after buying a single owner-occupant property with a 5% down payment first. And so what we're going to look at is, in various U.S. markets, in 304 markets that we did our analysis for, would you be financially independent faster if you actually bought 20% down rental properties? Or would you be financially independent faster if you took all the time to save up your money to buy properties for all cash? And I think most people believe that buying properties with 20% down is going to be faster. And won't you be surprised? Little preview of what's to come. And then the other question is, will you have a higher net worth if you buy 20% down rentals or if you buy properties for all cash? And that one, I think, is more in line with what people believe. They believe that, hey, look, if I use leverage, if I go buy 20% down rentals, that I will actually have a higher net worth. And I think that in most cities, as you will see here with our analysis, in most cities, you will find that to be true. But what is counterintuitive for a lot of people is that it actually is faster for you to be financially independent, where the income from your investments actually covers your expenses, if you actually delay buying the rental properties and you buy for cash. And it's not universally true. And I think this is the challenge that I think a lot of folks have, is that they believe that, oh, it's always better to do 20% down, or it's always better to buy properties for cash. And that is just not the case. And that it is very city specific. And what is also challenging is that these things can change. It could have been better for you to buy for all cash. And as the market changes, as the economics of a certain market vary, then it could be better for you to switch your strategy midstream and vice versa. So we will go into some details on that. And I'm sure I will dig into more of this in future classes when we really start diving into specific cities and how this stuff really plays out. Because the devil is in the details. And that is why it's really, really difficult for people to get generic advice. Some people say, oh, it's always better for you to put 20% down. You should put 20% down. Or you should put 25% down. Or you should buy for cash, or you should do the Nomad strategy, or you should do lease options, or whatever it is. And they don't actually take the time to sit down and do the math for their specific real estate market or their specific strategy and find out which one is going to get me to financial independence faster and which one's going to get me the highest net worth and which one am I actually optimizing for? Which one matters most to me? And there's lots of variations we could do beyond just the regular, buy the 20% down rentals. We could buy 20% down rentals until we get to the point where we could pay off some of the rentals by selling off other ones, or we could, take the money, sell the rental properties and convert that completely to some other investment like stocks or bonds and use the safe withdrawal rate to do that. But there's lots of variations. And that's why this is such an interesting field and interesting for us to do analysis. So I digress. So we modeled this in 304 US cities. And in both scenarios, you're buying an owner-occupant property first with 5% down payment. And that does come into play. We see a lot of these cities reach situations where they pay off their owner-occupant mortgage. That lowers the expenses they need to cover for being financially independent. And that's what pushes people over the edge for being financially independent. So we see this being a major factor in the analysis that we did. And I'm sure we'll do other analysis, or maybe I've even done it before, where we do not buy the owner-occupant property first. You actually remain a renter yourself, and we see what the impact of that is. But in this case, the analysis I did today, we buy an owner-occupant property first with 5% down payment. We move into the property. We live there. And then we're buying rental properties. We're either buying rental properties with 20% down, or we're buying rental properties by saving up and paying 100% down, buying them for all cash. Okay. So we call the one where we're doing 20% down, obviously 20% down, and the one where we are saving up and buying them for investor properties with all cash, OO, which stands for owner occupants, like a shorthand, then 9 all cash rentals. So we're trying to buy 10 properties total, 9 rentals, 1 owner occupant in all those cases for 20% down. So if we get to that, we stop buying more and we just hold them for there. If you want to see, I put a link on the screen here. If you want to see the actual link for this analysis, for the charts I have in this, you could do that. Or go to realestatefinancialplanner.com/model, and you can look at the assumptions for your specific city and determine whether it is better in your city to do this or to do 20% down or to do the all cash rental property acquisition. Okay. So in order to be considered financially independent, we're using the net positive cash flow from rental properties after all expenses. Vacancy, principal, interest, taxes, PMI, if you have any, which you do on the 5% down, insurance, maintenance, and management. Like all of those expenses get subtracted out from the income, and the net positive cash flow left over is what we're counting as part of the income to see if that income exceeds the expenses you have for personal living expenses. And then any money invested in the stock market times a 4% yearly safe withdrawal rate, that also counts toward whether or not somebody is financially independent. So when you have extra money that you're saving up to buy the next rental property, sometimes that actually starts contributing in a significant way to whether or not you are financially independent. And sometimes you don't even need to buy the next property. You bought one or two, and then you have a certain amount of money in stocks, and that could actually help push you over the edge as to whether you're financially independent. And then you technically don't have to buy the next property. And we would normally count any income you have from pensions or annuities or Social Security, but in this case, I've assumed all those are zero. So that's the assumptions for whether someone's financially independent. All right, so some of the assumptions. So each city, because we did this in 304 different cities, each city modeling uses their median home price properties and the estimated rent you get on those. So, we didn't pick like the lowest price properties or the most expensive properties, or even like, you know, where you would find a lot of folks like to invest in what I refer to as the second quartile, not the cheapest properties, not the very, very low end, and definitely not above median, but sort of that second quartile of home prices that tends to be the sweet spot for rental properties. But we're not necessarily doing that. We're kind of pushing the envelope and using more of the median there to do that. And we definitely did not apply any of the 88 strategies that I have for improving cash flow. So this is sort of like not optimizing for buying the best rental properties you can find. This is sort of buying what I would consider to be run-of-the-mill, average, not in the mathematical sense, but sort of like an average sort of property in that marketplace to do that. I also vary the job income based on the city so that they can actually afford properties in that city. I don't want, you know, somebody in a, you know, lower price market, you know, like Mobile, Alabama, as an example, trying to, you know, earn the same income as someone in Los Angeles, California. So we do adjust the amount of income people are earning in order to make the model so that they can actually buy properties in those marketplaces. But because we do that, we also make it more difficult in order for the person in Los Angeles to be financially independent, because they have to exceed that amount of income in order to qualify as being financially independent. So when more is given to be able to buy properties and to qualify for loans, more is expected from them in order to be financially independent. And that's the way we try to normalize it across different cities. We do start everybody with just enough for a 5% down payment and a couple points for closing costs. So everyone starts with about 7% of the price of properties in their marketplace. Now, that doesn't necessarily, it's just an interesting point and actually comes into play, I think, in some of the modeling we do. That doesn't necessarily mean that everyone buys a property in month one, because we require reserves even for buying the first owner-occupant property. And so it takes them a few months in order to save up in order to be able to buy their first property. And then when they do, they buy their first property as an owner-occupant, they move into that, it changes from the rent they were paying on their expenses to whatever the mortgage payment is on their expenses. And that could be, you know, significantly higher. And so it could reduce their savings by doing it that way. And so those that becomes a factor in some cities. We're not going to drill down into each individual city, although I probably should do some videos on that in the future. Reach out to me if you'd like to see me do more of those. But that is the case. And so buying an owner-occupant property, they will buy it with 5% down when they have enough money for down payment, closing costs, and their reserves in order to do that. As far as interest rates go for my assumptions, when buying an owner-occupant property, the 5% down one, I assume that they get an interest rate for about 6.5%. And they would have private mortgage insurance if they put that 5% down. So we are modeling in that they're paying private mortgage insurance. When the people that are buying the 20% down rental properties, we're assuming they're getting a 7% mortgage interest rate. So about a half point higher than the owner-occupant. And there would be no PMI when you put 20% down, because PMI is usually when you put less than 20% down. The lender requires you to buy private mortgage insurance to protect them in case you default because you put less than 20% down. That's what private mortgage insurance is. And then obviously, if you're buying properties for all cash, interest rates don't matter because you're not getting a loan on the property at all. Okay, so it's irrelevant when you're buying the properties all cash. I also assume that the stock market is earning 7% per year. Some people have argued that's a little bit conservative, James. You probably should bump that up. Yeah, I could definitely run. The challenge with running these models is I could run all these different variations, right? I could say, well, how does this look if I earn 8% in the stock market? How does it look if I put, 6.625 as the owner-occupant interest rate? Or what if I actually prepay the PMI? And this is both the blessing and the curse of doing all this modeling is I have an unlimited number of variations to run. But I want to keep it so that the variations are significant variations, changes in strategy rather than just mild changes in interest rates and stock market rates of return. And of course, in your individual city, you can go and drill down and do all that stuff. And if you need to do a consultation in order to run a specific set of assumptions for your specific situation with your properties that you already own and any ones you're doing that, you can reach out to us so we can coordinate that. All right, so I did model this out for 100 years. I realize that most of you are probably thinking to yourself, hey, look, I'm already 50 years old. I'm not going to live to be 100 years more. Yeah, I modeled it out to 100 anyway. So you could see basically when this stuff happens. And you can see all my assumptions in detail if you go to realestatefinancialplanner.com/model. All right, so for financial independence achieved. So in 180 of the 304 U.S. cities, it is faster for you in terms of achieving financial independence when you actually have the income from your assets, the rental properties, and any money invested in the stock market, any money that you did not use for rental property down payments yet. All that money times the safe withdrawal rate. So when all of those actually add up and exceed your expenses, it is faster for you in 180 cities if you buy the properties for cash. 180 of the 304 cities, it is faster for you to save up, take the extra time, put in the extra effort to save up until you can buy the property for free and clear without actually having a 20% down mortgage. You achieve financial independence faster in 180 cities. In 94 cities, it's faster for you to put 20% down. And this is what makes it hard, right? I'm squinting really hard. About a third, a third would be 101, but 94, it's close enough. About a third of the cities, you'd be better off putting 20% down in order to be financially independent faster. However, in about, two-thirds would be like 202, but a little less than two-thirds, high 50%, almost 60% of the time, it would be faster for you to pay cash, which is crazy. So I think most people don't expect that. They expect it to be faster, put 20% down in order to be financially independent. And in 30 cities, it didn't matter. You were financially independent the exact same month, whether you decided to do the all cash strategy or you put 20% down. Now, in our modeling, when we did the 20% down payment options, 9 of them never achieved financial independence. There were 9 cities where even going out 100 years, they never quite got to the point where their investments exceeded their expenses. Now, from a practical standpoint, in most of those cities, they have a significant net worth, right? Like they've got equity in their properties, they've got money saved up, or they've got equity in the other properties that they've got, you know, their owner-occupied property or their investment properties, and they have some cash flow coming in on their properties, but maybe it just wasn't enough mathematically for them to be considered fully financially independent. But imagine for a minute you're 100 years old and you've got $3 million worth of equity. Are you financially independent? For all practical purposes, yes. Now back that up. If you're 90 years old and you've got $3 million in real estate equity, you could sell the properties, you could refinance the property, probably not refi, you probably don't have a job, but you could sell the properties. You know, could you go and access that $3 million in some way and do stuff at 90? Sure. What about 80? Probably. What about 70? Sure. Now, I think this is the tricky part, right? Like the further back you go, the less that I think you could say that that's true. And so we'll do another class on that. Kind of like, you know, when is enough if you technically aren't, you know, you don't have enough money to be considered financially independent using a safe withdrawal rate and any cash flow you have in your rentals, but you've got assets. You know, when does that actually become enough? And so there's some really interesting things about that, which we'll cover in another class. And in the, so getting back to the analysis, so for 20% down, 9 never achieve financial independence, even though they may have significant assets. We'd have to go look at those individual 9 cities and analyze that. And when you buy properties all cash, 4 never achieve financial independence. So there were fewer. And in fact, the 4 of those actually were still not financially independent, even if you put 20% down. So 4 never achieve financial independence, regardless of which city you chose. Okay. But for the most part, the majority of the cities, it was faster for you to be financially independent by buying properties cash. But about a third of the time, it was actually better for you to do 20%. It's so crazy. It's like, it's really messing with a lot of people's minds because they're like, well, you know, what does it matter? Like, what is my city? Like, should I put 20% down? Should I buy all cash? Because in some cases, it's significantly faster for you to do that. I'll show you what the numbers are there in a second. This just shows you like when they actually achieve financial independence. And you'll notice for both of them, for the 20% down, which is the red stuff, and the all cash one, which is the gray area, there's a significant interesting thing that happens when we pay off that owner-occupant property. It really triggers financial independence for a lot of cities, not all of them, but a significant uptick when we pay off that first owner-occupant property, and it reduces the threshold we need to cover for our expenses. Because we no longer have a mortgage, so we no longer need to cover the expenses for a mortgage, and so we're considered financial independence faster once that mortgage is paid off when you do that. And you can see that in this chart here. All right, this chart shows you how long it takes in months to be financially independent versus the price of properties in that marketplace. And the green ones are ones where it's faster to pay cash. The red ones are ones where it is faster to put 20% down. I probably should just change these to be like green and blue, because red usually signifies to me some type of like loss or negative numbers or something like that. And in fact, there it's really not negative. It really should be like, I don't know, blue. But I digress. It's like Christmas colors. So the distance away from this zero line shows you how much faster it is for you to do this strategy. And in some cases, when you're paying all cash for properties, it is significantly faster. Like this is about the 10-year mark. This is about the 20-year mark. So there are some cities where it's more than 20 years faster for you to pay properties, for you to buy properties for cash. When you do the 20% down, there's definitely ones that are, you know, pushing 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years in some cases, but there's none that are very significant where they're, you know, over 10 years faster for you to have put 20% down to buy your rental properties. And I'll point out something that it tends to look like 20% down is better on the lower priced house markets. So in housing markets where it's a little bit less expensive properties, probably because they have slightly better cash flow economics, those tend to be the tiniest bit better. There's a little bit of a, you know, a low price point kind of thing going on here where it's a little bit faster for putting 20% down in the cheaper markets. And then in the more expensive markets, it was definitely faster for you to you know, buy the properties for all cash. Not that, you know, there's some cases where, you know, even up to $1 million, the 20% down was a little bit better. But for the most part, as you get more expensive, it tends to be better for you to buy the properties all cash. And, you know, and this sort of makes sense to me in a lot of ways, right? Because the as properties become more expensive and rents have not quite kept up with the increased, you know, interest rates and the increased prices that we've seen on properties, you know, it makes a lot more sense to go buy properties where you're paying all cash for properties. You know, they have better cash flow economics. And so, you know, I think that makes sense logically. We'd have to dig in and look at it, but you can kind of get the feel for that. All right. Now we've talked about how fast you achieve financial independence. Let's next talk about net worth. And net worth is, I think, a surprise compared to what we saw with the speed to financial independence, because in 271 cities out of 304, 271, about almost 90% of the time, if my math is right, about 90% of the time, you have a higher net worth at year 40 if you put 20% down. And no, just intuitively, when you're using a high leverage, you're getting these higher rates of return overall, you know, because you have appreciation in there and debt pay down, and you know, a little bit of cash flow probably in a lot of cases. But you're seeing, because you're leveraged, you're seeing these higher rates of return than somebody who took their money and invested in the stock market until they had enough in order to buy a rental property all cash. And so in 271 of 304 cities, you have a higher net worth if you put 20% down. In 26 cities, you have a higher net worth if you paid cash for properties at year 40. So it's not like universally true, although the overwhelming majority of the time, you have a higher net worth if you do that. And it's significantly higher, you know, like 34% higher, or, you know, on average, or, you know, 31% higher on median, if you kind of look at that. And as far as like seven cities, there were seven cities where the net worth was the same. It didn't matter which strategy you chose. They were essentially the same net worth for doing that. Okay. So that's interesting to me. Now, similarly to the chart we had before, it looks like there is a preference for the lower priced properties in terms of net worth. So the properties that probably had better cash flow. In fact, you know, I probably should do a variation of this chart where it's not the how much better net worth it's by price. It's how much better net worth by what the cash flow was on a rental property. Maybe it's cash on cash return on a rental property when you first acquire it. Maybe I'd do a variation on a chart. Something to think about in the future. I digress. So now we've got basically showing you that on the lower end, it's better usually to put 20% down in terms of net worth. As you get up on the higher end, looks like even the high ones, it usually doesn't make much of a difference, probably because you probably have a hard time getting rental properties to begin with where that makes sense to do that. That could possibly be what's going on there. But there's a few of them. And the net worth difference when buying properties for all cash did outperform the 20% down ones, it was not by a large amount. You know, these are relatively close to the zero line. So we're not seeing a significant difference there. Okay. All right. So looking at averages. So on average, when you add up all of the net worths at year 40 for everybody and you divide by the number that there are, 304, on average, there is a net worth at year 40 for 20% down of about 11.2 million approximately. Versus when you buy them all cash, it's about 7.3 million. So it's about 34% better on average in terms of net worth for you to put 20% down. In terms of how long it takes you to be financially independent, though, it is over 5 years, 5 years, 2.5 months faster on average for you to actually buy the properties in cash. So if you're like, I hate my job, I'm not really concerned about net worth, I just want to be able to live off my investments, and that is my goal, it is 5 years faster. You cannot work at that job that you hate 5 years less if you save up and buy properties all cash, which I think is counterintuitive for a lot of folks. Now, because we're buying properties all cash, any measure of risk where we are taking into account our debt load is going to be better when we buy properties for cash than if we buy properties for 20% down. When you buy properties for 20% down, all of our measures of debt, like our debt to income ratio, our debt to net worth, our debt to liquidity, you know, debt to account balance, like all of those, because we're taking on new debt every time we buy a 20% down property, those are going to be higher. So when you pay all cash for a property, it is less risky with the measures of risk that are related to debt. And because we have got no debt on the property, that is also true of like rent resiliency. How resilient are we to drops in rent? because you don't have a mortgage on the property, your rent can drop a lot before you'd have negative cash flow. And because we don't have a mortgage on a property, prices can drop a lot before we'd have negative equity. So rent resiliency and price resiliency are also lower, less risky when you buy properties all cash. So in general, the measures of risk are less risky when you buy properties all cash than if you put 20% down. Now, if we look at the median, which median is like the middlemost, not the average, but the middlemost number, it is 66 months faster, 5.5 years faster on median. That means half of them are longer than that, half of them are shorter than that, difference between the two strategies. So it is faster on median for you to pay all cash for properties by about 5.5 years. Okay. And net worth wise, it's about 31% better for you to put 20% down, a difference of about $8.7 million on median versus it's almost $6 million. So the difference between like $8.7 and $6 million is basically the difference there. And that's 31% better. You know, in terms of time, about 14% faster on median for you to pay all cash for your properties and about 12.3% on average faster, if you think about it that way. Okay. So, I've been talking primarily about this median price property and the, you know, the rent you might be able to get on that median price property. You could go and apply, you know, the 88 strategies we have to improve cash flow to make these numbers significantly better. So this is sort of like not a best case, not a worst case, but like not a great case either. And I think that for most investors, we can do better than this. Now, we're basically used to those median price properties, what the rent might be on them, and we didn't try to optimize our rental properties in any way. You should be able to choose, and you should be able to do better than what I'm talking about here. And if you want to model some of those improvements, see the impact, you know, you can kind of do that and do the software to kind of do the thing there. And if you're an expert in your local market and you like drill down into whatever city you're from, and you're like, you know, James, your numbers here are not great. I mean, we could make some improvements to these where the overwhelming majority of people could actually choose this property and that'd be an issue. Reach out to me and we can adjust the numbers and I'll rerun them to do it so that we can kind of get more accurate numbers for everybody. But I'm using actual median price homes for properties when I did the analysis. Okay. Interesting thing that comes up when we talk about this. Yes, we're buying that one owner-occupant property to start with to move into. However, once we buy that, we technically don't have to buy properties in the market we're living in. You know, we could live in LA and buy properties in Mobile. We could live in, you know, Pensacola, Florida and buy properties in Detroit, as an example. If we wanted to change the economics of our local market, we could go and find a better cash flow market to invest in or better appreciation market if you think that that's your strategy. You could go find a different market to invest in where you don't have to do it here. So I just want to point that out that, yes, we are buying a single property and moving into in a local market. Beyond that, we don't have to invest in that same market. So it could be a lot better than what we're showing here. We could take the money we're earning in, you know, our high-paying area, you know, our high-expense area, and use other properties in order to improve on that. And that could have a significant difference. All right, so easy conclusion. In our current market conditions, current house prices, current interest rate environment, current rents in 300 plus US cities, 304 US cities, using less than ideal median price and rent properties and taking the extra time to save up and buy properties for all cash, that gets you to financial independence faster in about 59% of the cities. For net worth though, you'd have a higher net worth at age 40, a year 40, when buying 20% down rentals in about 271 cities, or about 89% of the models. The market does matter. Now, I say a little bit, but you could argue that it matters a lot. So what's your goal? Is your goal financial independence? Is it speed to FI? Or is it net worth? You know, that can help determine which one of the strategies should you do. And which of the strategies is less risky? Well, how do you measure risk? You know, if you're measuring risk using any of the measures of like how much debt you have compared to your net worth or your liquidity or your income or anything like that, well, buying properties all cash limits how much debt you have. And so that's going to be less risky. Now, if you think about risk in terms of how resilient you are to drops in rent or drops in home prices, well, when you buy properties for all cash, that's less risky too. So in a lot of the measures of risk, you'd be better off buying properties all cash. You do need to look at your specific market, though. So, you know, apply the idiot strategies that we have, look at your specific market, and you can see how this plays out for your specific situation with your plan, your goals, and everything else. You can go to realestatefinancialplanner.com/model, pick your city, and you could drill down and look at a whole bunch of different analysis that we did there for your city. That's all I got for you. Hope you enjoyed this class. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye for now.
With home prices up, mortgage interest rates up, and rents up, but not quite enough to counteract the higher prices and interest rates, cash flow on rental properties in Sugar Land is harder than ever. Book a call with the Real Estate Financial Planner to apply our proprietary 88 strategies to improve cash flow on your rentals. See the show notes for a link to schedule your call and improve your cash flow today.
If you're a real estate agent, lender, or professional in Sugar Land that wants to help our real estate investor listeners, consider reaching out to learn about collaboration opportunities with this podcast. We'd love to add more value to our listeners by having you assist our investors buy, sell, and finance their real estate investments. See the show notes to schedule a call to discuss collaboration opportunities.